be a working group, or what's left of it. I'm actually quite happy to see that a few of you have made it, but compared to yesterday's plenary, the roles are a bit thin. But maybe that means that everybody who's interested in address policy is here, and everybody who's just reading email anyway is not. So, yeah. Definitely thanks for coming, and it's 9 o'clock in the morning, it's after a big party. I will try to keep it going easy. Yeah, as I said, this is the Address Policy Working Group. As a matter of introduction for people that are here for the first time, my name is Gerd Döring. I'm chairing this. I have a co-chair, Sander Stefan, who's sitting up there in the first row. Whatever that is supposed to mean. But there's some excitement in the room, which is good. As you're aware, this session is webcast, so if you want to comment anything, please use microphones that people can hear you. And if you don't want to be archived, to talk to us in private also. But since this is all being open, transparent, and so on, that's the way it is. This is the overall agenda of the things we will do today and tomorrow. We have three full time slots and quite a lot of stuff on the agenda. It's basically address policy being address policy. It's the same things that we do every time. Report on the current status of policy things, report on ongoing policy things, discuss open policy proposals, but we have a few new things and I will go through the agenda in a bit more detail now. This is what we start with today, administrative matters, agenda bashing, thanking the scribe. Ingrid from the Right NCC is taking notes and this is a hard job, so thank you very much and please give her an applause. Because thank you, it's really not an easy job. Then we will approve the minutes right after the agenda bashing. Then we have the traditional report from Phyllis from the RIPE NCC about current policy topics in the RIPE region and in other regions to just get you informed what's going on and give you background information to make better educated decisions. Then we have something new. In the last few years, policymaking has been sort of like the working group does policy. We put the policy that we have made on the desk of the RIPE NCC, and the IP resource analysts have to implement it. We are not really the people affected by the policy because we are just, say, a few hundreds, and there are 6,000 LIRs out there that are directly affected by the policy we make. So if we make a policy that makes 5,000 LIRs unhappy, we might not actually know. So this is why I asked the NCC, the Registration Services Department, to give us feedback on things that they have seen in the day-to-day operations where our policies are a bit vague, a bit unclear, things that lead to always the same discussion again and again and again, so that might point at a problem in the policy. So we will have some feedback from the people that actually live these policies day by day, and then we can decide whether we need or want to change anything. After that, I will give a short update on the routing issues discussion that we had last meeting. Then it's Felice again. You remember there was this document cosmetic surgeries project announced at the last meeting, which had the goal of making these sometimes very stitched together policy documents more readable without changing their actual meaning. And some process has been made, and Felice will tell you what the current state of affairs is. then it's time for the coffee break, and then we go into the actual discussions. Short report on what had happened with new proposals since RIPE 58. Discussion of all the open policy proposals that you can see listed there. And then discussion of the last slash 8. There's two proposals on the table which are sort of incompatible. There has been some legal advice to the NCC on things that we should do or should not do regarding monopoly things and EU law and so on. Since this is a scarce resource, we're running out. It might be prudent to actually check that we're on a safe track. This is tomorrow. Tomorrow we will have, again, something new. Dr. Welbrink from the German Ministry of Defense asked me for a time slot to present a bit on their problems with the current IPv6 address policy and the military requirements, like the US military specifying that every soldier is a site, so every soldier is a 4/48, which has some implications on the amount of addresses they need to. And then the German military of defense comes up to the German government and says, okay, we need a big chunk of addresses. And they say, well, RIPE isn't going to give us any. Or not that many as you might wish for. He's actually not coming up to complain. He's just trying to explain that outside of traditional ISP structures, some things are different. So this is more looking over the extending our horizon. Then we have a new policy proposal coming up, which is sort of in the do we need this? Do we want this? Give us feedback stage. And then we resume the discussion about things. That's basically what I have planned. Is there anything you want to see changed? You want to reorder? Okay, I see nobody jumping up and down. So I take this as the agenda is perfect. Minutes. The NCC has done very detailed, very good minutes from RIPE 58. They have been circulated to the list and no comments received. So I take it that these minutes are very detailed and very exact. And unless there's feedback from that room, I'm tempted to declare them final. So is there feedback on the minutes? Is there something inaccurate or incomplete? Is there anybody awake? Okay, hear laughter, so you are awake. So by this I declare the minutes final and we can start today's actual work. Felice, if you would be so kind.
Click. I was told when I clicked this, it will show up. It's not showing up.
Oops, support, please.
Somebody help.
Click something else. Aurora Borealis is active. Same, please.
Well, that's what this one told. Thank you. Okay. Oh, but I don't want this. Hello. Maybe not that easy. Sorry. person here. I see the second slide, not you. Thank you, yay. Okay, Filiz Yılmaz from the RIPEN CC. I'm the policy development manager, and I do these updates in every RIPE meeting. And Gert already mentioned what it is about, is to give you an update on what's going on within our region, and also go a bit beyond and talk to you about the topics that are commonly discussed in other regions. And one little disclaimer I will put on here is that I will not present each and every proposal that is being discussed in other regions, but this is a selective list that I saw as relevant to us here. So our colleagues already in their RAR updates yesterday gave the full preview of what they had in their agendas, but this is more about, trying to group them by topic, so it makes some sense rather than just going through a full list. So if we start with the RIPE policy update, we have four proposals accepted recently. The first one is allocating and assigning resources to the RIPEN CC, and we are very happy that we had this policy accepted finally. The problem here was that RIPEN CC as the RAR or the organization had some internet resource needs too, as you know, but we were so far out of the policy framework, so we wouldn't receive any resources for quite a long while after we received some at the very, almost a decade ago. And as you all know, internet resource needs grow in time and has been growing, especially within the last decade. One of them was IP version 6, and this is all how it started. We couldn't find a way that we could provide you with some good service running on IP version 6 by means of getting some resources for ourselves. So now finally we have this generic proposal. We had this generic proposal which was cooked up by Remco, thanks to him. And it is now dealing with, we recognize the needs of RIPEN CC as well as an organization. If they fit, if their need fits in the current policy framework that is available for all the LARs and the other end users, then RIPEN CC can fill in a request. Our registration services will evaluate this request, but obviously we will not make a decision on it, but we will send a recommendation based on that to a group of arbiters. And those independent people will make the final judgment if this request should be honored or not. And this is accepted in July 2009. So, and I believe there will be some update about this because we just got some resources for the RIPEN CC. And the second one is a global policy. It's relating to the ASM blocks coming from IANA to RARs. And we have this policy accepted within RIPE region, and one of the regions, APNIC, has also reached consensus on that, and three other regions are still discussing. However, I have a feeling that that will go through there too. The main point here was, you all know, but I will repeat that for completeness here, is that we were quite running into some issues thinking that by 2010, January, the RARs would not have enough 16-bit ASNs to further assign to you guys, basically, because according to the current or in RIPE terms now, previous policy, global policy, the IANA would cease making differentiation, any difference, making any differentiation between the two pools, 16-bit ASM pools and the 32-bit ASM pools. So far, those two pools, and they were evaluated separately, so RARs could have and can have two separate blocks from those two pools. However, by 2010 January, IANA will start thinking of them as one block. They will merge the whole space in one go. And that would mean, due to, you already have got the news, you have seen the low uptake in ASN 32 bits, that pool is, the usage in that pool is very low. And and the other one is high, but when you merge them, the resulting pool would still be too low to qualify for any ASNs. So RARs would be in a possible problem in risk of not having enough resources, while IANA still had the resource for that. So hopefully that will be sorted soon. However, like I said, since this is a global policy, after all the regions discuss it and eventually, hopefully, reach consensus, it will go to ICANN board for ratification. Only after that it will be a policy in effect. Next. Yeah, it's an interesting topic, removing routing requirements from the IP version 6 address allocation policy. This has also been accepted as well. Just last week we have made the announcements. I hope you have seen that. And our policy document has been updated too. What this means is previously in initial allocation criteria for the IP version 6, the RAR, the RIPE-NCC would require to for a commitment to have the block to be announced as a single block, as a single prefix. Now this is removed. And the main thing here was, this was actually recognized in the last RAP meeting, and then it came from a short discussion here, and then immediately you guys reacted on it and developed a proposal over it. It came out that operationally now, people find that maybe deaggregation should be recognized, and or, in other words, policy should not dictate any routing requirements. It may be a recommendation. I believe there will be other work in the recommendations area within the routing working group. However, as far as the addressing policy, the policy should not be forcing people to announce one single block as such, just to receive address space. The other one is the PI assignments for LARs. Yeah, this also came up quite recently, and it has been concluded quite quickly, which shows that there is a sudden interest in it, an immediate need. The idea was that some LARs may want to have a PI space other than receiving an IP version 6 allocation for themselves. And this need has been recognized, and this is accepted also. Last week we have made the announcements, so these are in place. Now, from this slide on are the ones that you are going to see throughout today in the second slot of Address Policy Working Group. We will be discussing these. The first one is use of final slash 8. Actually, the second one is also using the last slash 8 in a certain way. So these two proposals are actually talking about the same resource and how to use that same resource. The first one, 2008-06, which is the number for the proposal, use of final slash 8, is talking about distributing that last slash 8 among all the LARs at the time based on a minimum allocation size. Each of them will receive the current minimum allocation size at the time, and that will be it. And another slash 16 will be reserved for unforeseen problems or future needs. While the second one is putting up a requirement that last bit of address block for the IP version 4 should be solely used for those people who are putting efforts for IP version 6 deployment. So the idea is there should be a downscaling with a factor of 64, so the minimum allocation size will be set to slash 27, and those chunks will only be given to those people, to those organizations, who are going to be able to show that they are following the phases described in the specific RFC for their IP version 6 development. It is RFC 5211. And obviously these two proposals were found to be competing with each other as they were relating to the same resource, and our address policy working group chairs decided that they should be discussed together within relevance to each other. And yeah, it's been a long process so far, and we will see how it goes here. Your feedback will be appreciated, I believe, again. But the latest comments about these were focusing on, first, the legal issues. Some anti-competitive issues could rise. That's what has been commented as. And our board has taken action on that and had some legal review being done and put together. And I believe Axel will inform you about this more in detail later in the today. However, if you want to see the full report, it's already in the list. So if you go to Address Policy Working Group mailing list, Nigel yesterday, I believe, has sent that mail with the full report. The other comment was already questioning about, do we need this? And should there be a law/aid policy at all? How much time will that buy us? Basically, the argument was, if you're talking about a few months, which seems to be, then, you know, is it okay to change anything? And maybe changing anything in the last minute will raise some other fairness issues. So, and in either way, if we do choose to change it, should we maybe put up a maximum allocation size cap within the discussions? But then the next argument is, okay, what happens if the maximum size is not enough? We know that some people may need more. How do you push for these people to fit in one, you know, compact size? So these are the questions in mind, and probably we will hear more of these within today's session. Ensuring efficient use of historical IP version 4 resources. Now, this is yet another, I find, interesting proposal, because this is one of the first attempts to get the legacy space within the system, within the policy work. So far, legacy space has been policy exempt, so no policy would cover the legacy space as such. And the idea here, as we are leading towards the end of IP version 4 address space, wouldn't it be an idea to start thinking of the efficiency in those legacy blocks as well? Because they are the same. They are IP addresses. They are out there. So the proposal had a couple of revisions, and now we have the third version published on the on the website. And it's talking about applying the 80% utilization rate when over the legacy blocks as well. So if you're an LAR and if you are holding some legacy space, and if you need you need further allocation and you come to RIPEN-CC, RIPEN-CC will be tasked to ask you the 80% utilization over your legacy block as well as your other blocks. It's also proposing that that should be the case for first allocation too. So if you are a new LAR, your already holdings, your holdings within legacy space should be reviewed. Well, one of the latest comments about that was that, okay, fair enough, yeah, okay, we could do that, but shouldn't the assignments be covered as well? Because not all legacy space appear as allocations by LARs. Maybe some end users have it. How do we tackle that? So that's another point of interest and discussion. Initial certification policy for provider aggregatable address space holders. This is also under discussion still. I won't get into that. There will be a few slides Nigel showing to you about that later on. Now, the global policy for the allocation of IP version 4 blocks to regional internet registries with the tag, sorry for the long name, but it has to have the long name, 2901. This is an interesting one. I talked to you about global policies just a few slides ago, that global policies apply to all LARs, and they are developed through the policy development processes of all the regions, and then they go, as they receive consensus in all of them, it goes to the ICANN ratification, and then once it is ratified, they govern all the RAR regions and all the RARs, obviously, and they relate to the practices between IANA and RARs. Now, why is this interesting? Because it started with a group of people, authors from different regions, but all regions were represented within that group of authors, and they came up with a proposal which was basically about return space. So after the IP version 4 exhaustion of IANA pools, RARs could receive some return space. And if they do, they would return this back to IANA, so IANA could reallocate them back to the RARs, all of them. It originally started like that. However, it took an interesting twist because according to RMPDP, every NAC has the power or the right to change the text as they see fitted. And what happened in Erin region, when this was discussed, their community gave some feedback, and Erin AC is tasked to take that feedback and change the proposal according to that feedback so that it can reach consensus. So when this happened, the wording changed in a way that now we are discussing if it is still the same proposal. Because the twist in there, a may becomes a must in four other regions. So Erin has a version, Afrinic, Apnic, and Lacnic and RIPE. We do have a version. And those other three, Afrinic, Apnic, Lacnic, has already reached consensus. We are discussing, and Erin is discussing, but different versions. And Erin's version, the return of space to IANA is a may, is a matter of may, while in ours, all the other four is a must. So this is shortly, it is, but yeah, Axel will talk more about that. And I think today you will be hearing these questions, okay, what do we do, how we tackle this, and is this still a global, can we call it a global, how can it be a global? Yeah, these are the problems we will be seeing today or trying to solve. Now, in our region again, we are looking at the review phase proposals, which means these proposals has a draft document already published, and they have probably an impact analysis attached to them. PI assignment size, I won't get into the details of that. I believe Gert will wrap it up today. But it's about putting a minimum assignment size over PI assignments, full stop. Run out fairly. Well, this is coming from some deep concern that towards the end of the IP version 4 free pool, one organization may come and say, okay, this is my justified need, and they justify the need, but it is really huge, and then they get the big chunk of the left space, and the other people, other organizations, will only have that little part of the leftover space. And is this a good thing? Is this, you know, fair? Is there a perception of unfairness going on there? These were the concerns. And when this was raised in the previous RAP meetings, there were a group of people who thought that, yeah, okay, you know, that we feel the same concern, and we would like to come up with a solution. So the proposal came by, and the proposed solution is that instead of saying, okay, your need is too big and go away, there should be a gradual reduction in the allocation and assignment period. So instead of you coming as an LAR and projecting 12 months, at some point in time, your needs for the 9 months will be taken into account. And then after a point, 6 months needs will be taken into account. And it goes up until 3 months. So there is a gradual decrease. So the idea is your need is still the same, but you come to the RIPE-NCC to ask for space more often so that, in principle, people will have a better chance of running out at the same time. So the big companies do not cover all the space, and then, you know, 2 years later, a small company needs some space, and there's not any more over there. There were some comments about this as well on the list. And again, one of them was, do we have enough time for this to be effective? And the other thing was, well, the proposal is following fixed dates that are projected by Jeff Houston. And one of the suggestions was, okay, maybe we can follow up dates, not fixed dates, but according to the gradual decrease in the free pool. So those reductions will take place according to the, as the free/aids reduce in time as well. Now, this is the end of the RIPE update. So far, all these proposals appear in detail in the agenda today. But now I want to give you some information about what other regions are busy with. And like I said, I tried to couple them up, group them up by topic, and put some relevance around them. So one of the first topics is use of final unallocated IP version 4 address space. So how the last bits of IP version 4 pool should be used is a common topic in all the regions. People are busy with that. APNIC has just accepted, not just, actually they implemented even, the use of final slash 8. It's the same proposal that we have here. LACNIC accepted another one where they will reserve a slash 12, but that will focus on mainly the new entrants. Their target is the new entrants, so it is for the new LARs, and they will assign slash 24s to the critical infrastructure as well from that reservation. ERIN also accepted a proposal, which is for a slash 10, and they will allocate or assign slash 28 minimum or slash 24 maximums based on IP version 6 requirements. So remember I mentioned two competing proposals in our region, chopping up the last slash 8 among all the members at the time, and the other one giving out space to those according to their IP version 6 deployment. So different regions went for different versions. You see here, they are really competing, and yeah, this is a regional difference, as you can see. APNIC and LACNIC chose one way, and ERIN seems to be going the other way. Running out fairly, it's not an easy one. Well, ERIN picked up on a similar proposal to ours, and they are discussing an equitable IP version 4 runout proposal. And the principle is more or less the same. They are also talking about gradual decrease in allocation periods. Their current allocation period is the same as ours, 12 months. They want to also gradually decrease it, but they chose to not to follow the fixed days, but rather to follow timeline depending on the leftover slash 8. So when they see 20 slash 8s in the free pool, they will decrease it to 6 months. When it comes to 10, they will start applying 3 months. And this is still in discussion. One other important point there, which is different than ours, is that they also introduce a maximum allocation size when they hit the last slash 8. So when they starts allocating from the last slash 8, there will be a maximum allocation size applied. And that is not a fixed size. It will be the next complete CIDR prefix of the which will be less than or equal to the 1/4 of the available free ERIN pool. And they keep their minimum allocation size anyway. Now, legacy space.
Please.
Yes.
Hi. Is the mic on? Yes. Hi, Stacy Hughes, ERIN AC. I want to point out that we are actively discussing this. It hasn't been decided. So that all that stuff is not written in stone by any means.
Legacy space, APNIC accepted the same proposal that we have here, ensuring efficient use of historical IP version 4 resources. So again, they implemented the proposal that is that's an effort to put the legacy space into the system. It is a slightly more detailed version, though, than the one we have here. The difference is mainly the definition of the historical resources. They have a very strict definition what that is. And we understand that is pre-RAR registration, basically. And they have the same criteria, further allocation criteria to apply over the legacy space. Transfers. Well, this has been a long ongoing discussion and a concept within regions. Four regions discussed this, APNIC, ERIN, and LACNIC, and us, obviously. And we have already accepted that and implemented that for almost a year now. It was at the beginning of 2009 that it was implemented. And Well, I won't go into the details. So far, in my previous updates, I was showing a table with the differences of the certain differences, a matrix with factors of differences between regions. But at this point, I think they're kind of evened out. What happened, Erin and APNIC recently also passed through and reached consensus over a transfer proposal. And the one of the very main topics that was discussed in all regions was that how would it happen? A transfer, could it happen just like that? An organization agreeing with another one and they pass their address space to the other. And all the regions seem to have agreed that they want to see the RAR in that process. And they justified that by putting a requirement of the requesting justification for need. So that principle is kept in all of the policy proposals and then recently with the accepted policies. And they all apply within region. So I don't have the matrix anymore, and hopefully I won't have a transfer slide in the next update either. IP version 6, and I'm coming to an end. Single aggregator must or not. I mentioned the proposal that has been accepted in our region recently, which originated actually within the last RAD meeting, where people recognized the need, possible need of de-aggregation or some address management over the IP version 6 allocations. And this is recognized in other regions too. The main thing is here, it is useful to understand that IP version 6 historically as a policy is coming from a framework where aggregation was the most important focus point. It was more important than conservation at the time because one of the things that IP version 6 was solving at the time was the routing tables, right? But in time, I think over the decade, when now we understand that people are using IP version 6 more on an operational basis, people are hitting to those operational problems. And it's good to see these proposals coming because I understand that people want to do some address management. They want to do some redundancy management over their allocation. They want to do some load balancing. So they want to play around with their allocations. That's good. And what happened in Erin, they are discussing at the moment removing this requirement for single aggregate as well. LACNIC reached consensus about that. And interesting thing here, I have to mention, APNIC is discussing the other way around. APNIC had a proposal in their last meeting that not only the initial allocation should be a single aggregate, it should be elaborately and explicitly put in the policy that further allocations should be announced as a single allocation as well, single prefix as well. However, that did not reach consensus. And actually, I was there, and the proposer, seeing the feedback, he even said, oh, maybe I should propose the other way around, dropping this requirement. And this went back to the list. So maybe we might see something happening in this regards in APNIC region too. Can I finish and then? Yeah. Okay. This is my usual slide. If you don't believe me, go dig into those archives and let me know where I I made it wrong. I dare you. But yeah, I'll skip to that. No, I have still two slides, please. And these are my promotional slides. I never included these before. I normally keep an eye on how many people are subscribed to the Address Policy Working Group list, as well as the policy announced list. And this time I decided that I'm gonna report it over the last 3 years. Well, you may think it's not very significant, but I still think it's a good sign that from within 3 years, it seems like one-third it had a one-third of increase over the last 3 years for compared to 2006 numbers and 2009. So, we are growing as the number. This is a good sign, and we want more people in even. But number of people is something. What they say is another thing. This is more promotional slide. Again, maybe you won't see, you won't think that this is significant, but I believe it is. You can see in the last 3 years, the number of posts to the address policy working group has also increased. So people seem to be more active, which I think is a good thing. And yeah, please keep discussing and communicating. That's the promotion. And now, yes.
Well, thank you for that very detailed report. And sorry for interrupting. I assumed that the last slide would be the last slide. And
so
not
used
the,
to, yeah.
Yeah. A few questions.
Yeah, Roque Aliano from Langning. I just want to clarify that in the for both the transfer and the summarization of the IPv6 announcement, we did not reach consensus yet. So still under discussion.
Oh, thank you. Sorry. Okay. Thanks for the clarification.
John Schnitzlein. Also on the subject of transfers, I believe that there's less uniformity across regions. In APNIC, they do not require justification for allocations to be transferred.
I believe they do, but I can check this quickly and come back to you.
Okay, good, thank
yeah.
you.
Oh, Jeff. Jeff, here is your clarification.
APNIC, if you're talking about transfers, and up until the exhaustion of IPv4 is defined by until we get to the stage of the last /8 and a particularly different set of allocation policies, recipients of transfers need to justify the, if you will, address space that they would receive under the transfer using the prevailing policies of allocation. Only thereafter, in other words, once the piggy bank is empty, does that criteria disappear, but we have nothing left to allocate anyway, so prevailing allocation policies is a weird term at that point in time. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the clarification. Rüdiger, are you standing at the microphone or are you just standing? Okay, thanks again, Felice, and let's go on. So while Ops is fighting with the Mac, I will just not use my slide for introducing Alex and explain what I have in mind. Alex from the NCC Registration Services Policy Implementation Department has volunteered to sort of report back what they see during day-to-day operations in things that we might want to know about. Let's phrase it that way. Whether it was intentional put in the policy that way or whether it was an oversight is something that we need to decide then later on. So there's one twist to this today. I don't want to discuss solutions to these issues today. So we're happy to take questions that are needed to clarify understanding the issue at hand. But we're not going into solution space today. I want you to think about this for 24 hours. And tomorrow in the working group session after lunch, we have half an hour, three quarters of an hour dedicated to specifically discussing these issues. Do we want to change anything? Do we see this as a problem? Do we want to come up with solutions? But this will happen tomorrow. So you have time to think about this. Today, only clarification questions, please.
Nothing there. Okay. having some technical difficulties. My name is Alex Lehoe from the Right NCC. I'm the Policy Implementation Coordinator. And this presentation is about a part of the policy development process. I'm sure everyone's familiar with the development cycle. And here we're going to try to fill this evaluation bubble a little bit by providing some feedback from our daily experiences with some of the policies. As Gert said, today I'll present a few items and people can ask questions to make sure that it's clear exactly what I'm talking about. And discussion about solutions is supposed to happen tomorrow. Now, in May we implemented the long-awaited IPv6 BI policy. And there's been some take-up of that. We've done about 30 assignments since May. The take-up could be a little higher, probably, because in the same period we assigned about 900 IPv4 PI prefixes. And there are a few differences between the policies that may be the reason that the take-up's been a little bit slow. Now, the policy texts are mostly the same, but there are a few differences. The main difference is that in IPv4 policy, defines IPs used to connect end users to an ISP's infrastructure as that ISP's infrastructure. While the this allows the use of BI space for example, ISPs to do cable or DSL or various kinds of hosting. The IPv6 policy has no such text in it. It does not define IPs used to connect users as LAR infrastructure or ISP infrastructure. But it's very clear that about the fact that none of this PI space should be assigned to other parties. Now, from these 900 PI assignments in IPv4 that we've done, roughly half of that is to organizations that do cable or DSL and web hosting and that kind of thing. And there have been quite a few of these organizations that came to us also for an IPv6 prefix, but the IPv6 policy does not seem to allow us to assign these prefixes to them. This has caused some confusion because there's been a big push to deploy IPv6 from everywhere, and these people come to us and they want an IPv6 prefix to deploy IPv6 in their network, and we tell them they can't have one. So this is not entirely clear if that was the real intention of this policy. Maybe it's an idea to, because I'll be presenting some different items, that if there are any questions about clarification, that we do them between the presentations. So if there are any questions now, I'll be happy to take them. Okay. This is a policy that's been around for a long time. The document is quite short. And it doesn't cause us a lot of difficulties. The main bit of text is this, defines what an autonomous system is. As a group of network, as a network or a group of networks that have a single clearly defined routing policy. On the face of it, this is very clear. Although, what exactly is a routing policy? In most cases, it's very clear. We have a network. It needs to announce prefixes. It's going to multi-home. It needs an AS number. But we do receive quite a few requests from organizations that have a network, and they want to have more than a single AS number. And the policy doesn't really provide many handholds to evaluate requests like this. I have an example here. Let's say we have an ISP that has a central office, and they have a bunch of POPs that are connected to this office. And they might have peerings in the different POPs and from their central office. Most networks like this do their operations with a single AS number. But there are quite a few that would like to use multiple AS numbers for this. Up to, I think the biggest request we've ever received is a request for 15 AS numbers for a network like this. The policy doesn't really provide many handholds to evaluate requests like this. So the current RS interpretation is that if your network is under one administrative control and is every bits of it are connected to each other, you can do your operations with a single AS number. There are some of these networks that are disconnected. For example, large countries like Russia, an ISP might have operations in St. Petersburg and in Vladivostok, and the two operations might not be connected to each other. In these cases, it's fairly clear that doing this with a single AS number is difficult, and we'll assign a second AS number. But if it's a single network that's all connected, we tend to not assign multiple AS numbers. But the discussion with these requesters often goes very deep into BGP issues. So it's not entirely clear from the policy what it would like us to do in this case. Are there any questions for clarification here? Yes.
Are you actually using abstract policy where actually routing policy is a technically defined terms, as in, well, okay, people are deploying boxes that have a technically defined policy?
Yes. I'm not sure what you're...
Well, okay.
Can I help you, Rüdiger?
Yes.
Tanja Kahnberg, Network Citizen. I think what Rüdiger tries to say is the technical criterion is if you have a single routing policy, you only need one AS. If you have distinct routing policies, you have to have multiple ASs. Is that what you're trying to say?
Exactly.
Right.
So that could be,
and that is not related to how many personas you need in your schizophrenic mind. It's how many boxes you have deployed and have particular purposes.
Right. If I go back to this picture, what we see is we see organizations that have specified their routing policy and define in their single routing policy all the peerings they have in all the various places. Mm. We also see organizations that have the exact same setup, but they specify their routing policy per POP.
Yeah.
Yes. Or at least that's what they would like to do.
And there are people who are doing essentially the same business and just have different ways to organize mm-hmm. themselves.
We are starting to go into a solution space, so let's keep that part for tomorrow, whether this is what we want or not what we want. Today is just clarification, whether this is good or bad, we should discuss tomorrow.
I have a question for clarification.
Daniel?
It's slightly related, and I don't expect an answer immediately, but it might be interesting to have an answer tomorrow. If you look at the burn rate of ASs, i.e. how many ASs get allocated or assigned between the different RIRs, it appears that since about 3 to 4 years, the RIPE NCC goes through many more ASs relatively to the other RIRs. This has escaped my attention, but Jeff rubbed my nose in it yesterday. And it would be interesting to hear some less than speculative, some sort of, at least some gut feeling from the RS department as to why this is. That's maybe just a bit of a tall order, but maybe to have some ideas about how the distribution of the various assignments happens, i.e. are we making just more assignments? Are we making bigger assignments, or do we give large bunches? Or is it sort of a different distribution where we have sort of a normal burn rate that the others have, and then we have a few huge requests? And it would be really interesting to know this tomorrow.
Although I could get an answer now.
That would be even better. Thank you.
Yes. If you look at the number of prefixes we hand out, either as PA allocations or PI assignments.
AS numbers. I'm talking AS.
Yes. They follow, or they are followed closely by the number of ASs we hand out. So what you see is that when an organization comes to us for a prefix, either a PA allocation or a PI assignment, that request is not always, but in about 3/4 of the cases, accompanied by an AS request, because they intend to operate their own routing infrastructure. Is that an answer to your question?
So did I hear this correctly in saying, okay, we get lots of PI requests and they all want an AS to go with their tiny bit of address space?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. You've been waiting for...
Yeah, Wilfried Weber from Vienna University, and at that point in time also Vienna Internet Exchange and the National Research Network. I just wanted to let you know that we are guilty as well of asking recently for just another AS number. And the thing that strikes me with your explanation is that the definition of an organization is pretty fuzzy. And it's less sort of the routing policy fuzziness. I think the problem we are having is that in many situations we have one organization with one routing policy, with a well-defined business case. Like in our situation, we are one organization formally, mm-hmm. but we are wearing different hats. And we are, underneath these hats, we are offering different services or different functionality in the network, which requires a separate specific routing policy. And although we are using part of our PA address space, there is complexity in the routing relationships between organizations, which we think requires us, or which makes it the most obvious and straightforward implementation technology to announce those things with a well-defined routing policy within a well-defined autonomous system, and not playing funny games with preferences and no export and those things, just because it becomes unmanageable if the complexity grows.
Right, yes, I'm not aware of your request, but requests like it. And this is exactly why this is being presented here, because we, at Registration Services, we do feel that there is probably, in some cases, a clear reason to request multiple AS numbers, but we feel also that the current policy doesn't provide enough handholds to really evaluate these requests.
Rob Luxa, on the number of ASs that we use and which have been reported as being higher than in other regions, I don't believe that. In the absolute numbers, yes, but you should also realize that the RIPE NCC has about 7,000 members, which is about the grand total of all the other RARs together. So I think if you look at the consumption rate per ISP, I don't think we are that excessive. And I think we should also be careful not to interpret policies in such a way that we prescribe people how to run their business. There is no acute shortage of AS numbers, so.
It is not the intention to prescribe people how to run their business at all.
Yeah. Jeff Houston, APNIC. Yeah. Just a small amount of data here to answer this question a little bit more. In 2009, since January the 1st, RIPE have recorded in their stats files as making 2,660 separate IPv4 allocations, and over the same period, 1,671 AS numbers, which is slightly more than 50% in terms of absolute numbers. In the same period, APNIC has made 973 IPv4 allocations and allocated 367 AS numbers. So the rates, the relative rates, are certainly quite different, and they are symptomatic of a different style and approach out there in deployment in terms of how the network is structured, I believe. Thank you.
Short comment, though I don't have firm data on this. I think we have to expect that a large driver in large number of AS number requests would be multi-homing of, well, okay, rather small sites, and that's quite obviously a very different problem from multiple ASs for a single organization. And I could imagine very well that the take-up of multi-homing practices may be different in various regions.
I actually want to play back the ball to Jeff or to the APNIC folks being here. I'm not sure whether this is feasible, but if the different RS folks could maybe sit together and take a look at this, what the typical distribution is like, does the RIPE ASs, do they always go hand in hand with the PI, and the APNIC ASs always just attached to a PA block, and PI holders never come back for an AS and things like that. I think that's basically similar to what Rüdiger said, that if all RIPE PI holders plan to do multi-homing and need an AS number for that, and in the APNIC region, people just use their PI to attach to an existing network and use their AS number. That would certainly explain why the usage rates are different. But what I do is pure speculation, so maybe you have indeed some numbers that could help us there. I see Jeff already coming up with an answer. That was fast.
Let me just offer one more data point here, because they're really quite quick to find out in terms of just raw numbers. I said before that RIPE had done 2,600 allocations in V4 this year and 1,600 AS numbers, which does seem, in a proportion, slightly higher than APNIC. Over the same period, this is interesting again, ARIN have done 1,242 separate IPv4 allocations and have allocated 1,157 AS numbers, which is much, much closer than as a one-to-one ratio than anyone else. I think there is something in there, but it's going to take a little bit of time to understand, because the next piece of work is to go through the WHOIS databases and actually see if we can match entities. In other words, this address block matches this AS number, and then start looking at deployment to understand whether the ASs have been deployed in stub or transit mode in BGP. So if you're willing to wait, and it won't be tomorrow, we can certainly give you more data from this in analyzing the RIR stats, if that's what you're interested in.
I think that this would be interesting to actually see. Well, we have seen the number on stage that RIPE and ARIN are burning through ASs like crazy. And I'm curious to why this is so and why there's a difference. And I think there might be a good reason due to different way we run the networks, and understanding the networks is always useful.
Okay, well, I'm happy to see what I can do. Thank you.
Thank you. Daniel first, then Jabber.
Daniel Kahnberg with RIPE NCC Chief Scientist hat on. Just for the record, there may be no immediately imminent shortage of AS numbers, and there's certainly no shortage of AS numbers in the foreseeable future. However, there is a shortage of ASN 16, like 16-bit AS numbers, coming up in the immediate to medium term. Just for the record, so that people who may not be aware of this heard this.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out.
Hello, Andrea Cima, RIPE NCC. I just wanted to add a little bit of information. As we have been talking about the number of allocations made, Just wanted to add that in 2006, the RAPNCC made about 1,800 PI assignments, 2007, 2,200, like in 2008. And usually each, like Alex was saying before, each PI assignment requester also requests an AES number to be able to route this address space on the internet. Just
right. Which explains things a lot. Okay, I think we're through with the AS numbers,
yes.
So let's go to the third one.
Okay. IPv4 additional allocations, and this one is also known as the 80% rule. The IPv4 policy mentions the 80% rule twice, and the 80% rule is the criteria when we will allocate an additional allocation to an LAR. In section 5.3, it says that 80% of all the address space needs to be used. And then right in the next section, it says that 80% of all their allocations need to be used. Now, this may seem the same, but there's a subtle difference there. Because it's entirely possible to have, for example, a large allocation fully used and then a small allocation which is completely unused and still have 80% overall, but not 80% of each and every allocation. RS currently has the more strict interpretation of this. Our position is if you have a completely empty allocation, why are you coming for a new allocation? Although there is some room to maneuver because there's in practice many reasons why an LAR might have an allocation which is well under 80%. For example, they might have gone through one or more mergers and have acquired some allocations through the mergers that in some cases are a big mess and need to be cleaned up. And they might be in the process of doing this, but still need to expand their current existing deployment. So in cases like this, we're a bit easy on them. We might still give them the additional allocation, but we'll make agreements with them that they're actually working on cleaning up or filling up the existing allocations. Make a note of this and, of course, check this at some point. The reason why I'm presenting this is that this is something that keeps coming back time and time again. And it's been brought to the address policy mailing list a few times, but there's never been a very clear consensus either way of what the interpretation should be. And we're quite happy doing what we do now. But we do have regular discussions about this with our members, and we feel it would be good to have some very clear clarification on how it should be, whether it should be all address space taken together or each and every allocation individually. So yeah, policy text is a little bit ambiguous. Are there any questions on this? Good. Then that was it for now. So as Gert said, everyone has the chance to sleep on it, and there'll be more discussion tomorrow.
Okay, thank you very much for coming forward and explaining to us. Yeah, well, thank you very much. And for you, please think about these, think about what you think should happen, might happen, whether we see this as a problem, and if yes, how to change the wording or the actual policy to adjust to it.
And there will be another presentation after that.
Now it's me again, just giving you an update on the routing issues. Those that have not been directly involved at the last meeting and the time in between. Before the last RIPE meeting, we had a policy proposal on the table where somebody said, okay, we are operating two different networks that are not connected. It's the same organization, it's a single LIR. We want IPv6 address space for both. They are not connected, so we cannot use just a single 32, we need to have two different networks visible to the world. The policy document seems to imply that you're not allowed to announce more specifics. You have to announce the aggregate, and people interpret this as the aggregate only. This has come up again and again. So the proposal was to have some complicated criteria under which an organization could receive a second 32, even if the first 32 is not full. And we sort of quickly figured out that we are not going to arrive at a set of criteria that would help everybody who needs this, while not at the same time sort of giving people that do not need this multiple 32s for free, which the working group didn't want. So it was clear that there is no consensus to go forward with this, and this proposal was abandoned. But we recognized the problem of these networks. So at the working group meeting, we discussed that it might be more useful to have the operator community decide on what's useful regarding routing, and the address policy community stop worrying about routing requirements. So we had a new proposal, 2009/6, to remove this sentence from the IPv6 policy that requires you to announce this 32 or whatever size you got as a single aggregate. This has been implemented, the policy text has been updated, and it's sort of gone from our plate. But at this point in time, we sort of have no very useful guidance to operators what is considered okay and what is considered excessive deaggregation. What are the reasons why you might want to deaggregate or not? So the routing working group has come up with a recommendation document that has been circulated to the routing working group mailing list, I think some 4 weeks ago. It has not yet received any comment, which might imply that everybody agrees with the document, but a few positive voices might be helpful. And this is, of course, discussed tomorrow morning in the routing working group. So this is basically all I want to say about the routing issue. You are the operators. You need to decide what you want to see in the global routing table and what you don't want to see, accepting that there are networks that are different from your own. And there needs to be a guidance document that you can point people to and say, hey, what you're doing is stupid. Don't do it this way, because everybody agrees that it should not be done that way. Or if somebody has real issues, like I have this complicated network and I don't know how to run it, point them to the document that says, if you are in this situation, it's perfectly fine to do some level of deaggregation. But we really want this guidance document, and it's an operator document, so it's routing. I see Rüdiger standing up and shaking his head and obviously disagreeing with me about things. Please.
I'm not really disagreeing a lot. There is one minor point in terminology, and that is I'm hearing in this audience always just deaggregation. I think what we should be saying is announcing additional prefixes. Talking in the way that the only thing we are talking about is deaggregation actually gives a wrong hint.
I'm not exactly sure what the current wording is used in the document.
In all the communication, including all the all these speeches today, there always has been only the word of deaggregation. And the thing is, we do not need, and we should not have constraints on what announcements are done out of the block, but we should not. We also should not talk in a way so that people get the idea. It's all about separating up all stuff.
Rob Evans, author of the current draft. Yes, you're right. It says deaggregation because that's the first word that came to mind. If you're happy with the intent of the document, and there's consensus that we should change the terminology to make it more politically correct, and say splitting up or something like that, then we can work on that. Yeah. But we can talk about this tomorrow, probably.
I agree with Rüdiger that just mentioning deaggregation all over the place is giving a bit of a wrong signal, maybe. But announcing multiple prefixes of your allocation or something like that.
I think you're right, yeah. The impression I've got from a couple of people is that the word deaggregation seems to set off nervous ticks, and people start going, no.
Okay. In the routing working group tomorrow morning, please come and discuss and help make this a good document. Oops. Okay, that was actually my last slide for the first slot. This is the welcome slide for the after the coffee break slot, but we are not done yet. I have asked Felice to give another short report on the document surgeries project. Felice, is your report on this thing? Let's see whether I can find it. Where to click to make this bit well behave. Okay, as I said, some of the ripe documents have become pretty much stitched together over time, like the before policy documents having changed 10 times over the past. And usually new policy proposals always changing specific words or specific paragraphs and not taking the whole document structure into account. Because after all, everything you want to change is a specific detail. So the whole document structure sometimes has become really hard to read, and Felice volunteered to start working on this difficult task to make the documents properly readable without changing their intention. And it's proceeding.
Yeah, a short update about this whole thing. First of all, a reminder of what it is, if you have some, blackouts from last night, or you haven't been here in the last two RIPE meetings, you may not know about this. The main idea is, after every accepted proposal, we document these proposals in a RIPE document. It can be an existing document, so the acceptance of the proposal is realized as an update over an existing document, or we create a new document. Now, for the updates on the existing documents, we came to the realization of a problem, which is basically getting the document very distorted or interrupted by each update. What happens there often, the proposers have a specific wording choice. Fair enough, we work with them together with the other responsive working group chairs at the stage of the proposal, even before proposal probably is public out there. We do make some wording recommendations, but sometimes this doesn't work, it doesn't fit. So what we do, it goes out with the proposer's choice of wording as well as the style. And then you also have the problem of having the structure being interrupted by each update, because every update to the document is a patch, basically. You insert a new section, or you delete a previous section, so the flow it's very hard to maintain the flow through those updates. In RIPE 57, there was a very simple suggestion to run a project, just to review the language of the documents so that you don't change anything, but just the structure and the readability is improved. So since then, what we have done, we have come up with a plan which got the consent of the address policy working group chairs, and we announced this plan to you in RIPE 58, which was the last RIPE meeting. So the plan is very simple. We will draft it in the house in the NCC. We will get initial confirmation from the address policy working group chairs, Gert and Sander, and then we will publish your draft to you guys for your review, which will stay there out for the month, which is our normal review time period according to the full policy development process as well. So we kind of took that as a framework. And after that 1 month, if you're happy, then we will publish the document as a new document with the suggested wording, new wording. Now, it does, if we receive feedback, obviously we will have to do iterations over these past points. Now, six policy documents will be reviewed within that methodology. And what we have done so far, we have already reviewed two, AS numbers and IP version 6 for IXPs. And there was a reason to choose those two documents, which was part of the plan anyway, because they are quite short. And yeah, if you come up with today a decision about the routing practices within the ASN document, maybe we can also integrate that. But yeah, that's another different process or a different matter. But yeah, and we wanted to learn from these documents how the process would work. Because this is the first time really we are doing this after the IP version 4 document got a real review about 10 years ago. What happened about these? The chairs gave their consent to us recently, and now, yeah, from the next few couple of weeks, you will see these being announced in the list, and then you can review and let us know what you feel about that. However, I want to mention one important thing, which was a challenge we faced, as we already anticipated throughout the whole practice, is the formatting, basically, as well as, you know, choosing the right wording. I must say, I was going through in my previous update slides, and I saw this transparency is the key word in there as well, and it is very important. We want to make sure that you understand the changes that we come up with, and we see as them as literal changes, not in the core policy change, because our aim is totally not to change the policy. Policy is there, the framework is understood there, the rule, if you like to call it, is well known by everybody. We just want to find a better way of describing this in our documents. Now, it's not an easy task, you can imagine. There seems to be also personal preference factors we ran into between the chairs. The way I think something is clear is totally unclear to Gerd, and vice versa. So we decided eventually that we will try to cover all tastes and personal preferences as well. So with the same content, same updated draft, we will publish it in two formats, while in one, all the changes will be marked, like the way we do today when we have a drafted document, you know, old or original text compared to the new text. And the other one will be just a pure document, full document, and you will see it won't be interrupted with any breaks. And in both, we will provide the summary at the top, so where the major changes are done, so you can go to the relevant section. Now, if you have any better ideas to do this, please let us know, and we will see if we can incorporate that as well. So this is my update about that.
Well, again, thank you for undertaking this project, and it's definitely needed, but it will not be easy. As you have said, these documents need work, and actually reviewing the changes for is this still the same policy while the complete wording looks different is not going to be easy. And the only way we can make this succeed is with your help. So we are changing policy documents, and this needs to be done very much in the open, very much with the whole working group or the whole community, to be absolutely clear that we are not sneaking in policy changes by bystepping the PDP process, that this is really just making the documents more readable, more orderly. So you need to review this. You need to tell us we don't agree with this specific change, or yes, this is okay, go ahead. Yeah, again, thanks for taking up this project. Thanks to you for actually showing up here after the party. And now we go into the coffee break. We are good on time. Please be back at 11. enjoy your coffee break, and then we go into the policy discussions. Thank you.